We're active in about 15 campuses, and we're growing very, very quickly. And keep in mind, this is not just a flash in the pan movement. We're going to become an institution to give them the power and the confidence to stand up and let their voice be heard.
I started this organization when I was 18 years old. I decided not to go to college. I didn't get my dream school, which was the United States Military Academy at West Point. I have this idea to galvanize and motivate the future youth of this country around a core set of ideas, not just political parties or politicians. And the ideas are really America's the greatest country in the history of the world. Constitution is the greatest political document ever written, and free enterprise is the most assured way to lift people out of poverty and create prosperity for all. Those are the three big ideas. And I think that's something that can win. We as Christians are called to go into the public arena to correct error with truth. So I go to college campuses and there's a lot of error. We're all sinners. We all live in error. I'm far more interested in what God wants of me than what I want from God.
I have to say this without getting emotional, but I'm very proud of my husband. And I know many of you are too. You have worked so hard. And I know a lot of you have seen, obviously, his videos on TikTok and all the stuff he does on campus, but no one gets to see him from my angle except for myself and our children. And the sacrifices that he made this year, he's amazing. I'm very blessed.
And I would not have been able to do any of it without Erica. And that's the real truth. I'll tell you what. You are here as a grassroots response to the top-down revolution happening in this country. I want our Turning Point USA students to receive a round of applause. These are the freedom fighters of America.
And the media said that Turning Point could never run a ground game. They weren't experienced. They didn't know Charlie, right?
This is the greatest generational realignment since Woodstock. This generation is the most conservative generation that we have seen in well over 50 years, and the numbers show it. What young people especially are screaming at is they say, give me a structure that I can live my life by. And especially with young men, more challenging of them, more saying, you know what? Honestly, I'm not gonna talk down to you. Stop being a boy and become a man. You wanna learn what that means? Come to church and I'll tell you what it means to become a man. Because we have the greatest story ever told. What can I do to save the country? You answer that question every single day because you are doing the work to save this beautiful republic. You are doing something that is bigger than you.
If everything completely goes away, how do you want to be remembered?
I want to be remembered for courage, for my faith. That would be the most important thing. Most important thing is my faith in my life.
All right, Sandy Rios with you on Sandy Rios 24/7. Well, you know, that's the voice and life of Charlie Kirk, and we are actually approaching the one-year anniversary of his assassination, and it seems almost in many ways to me like it's been longer than that. And when I see him, it's hard to explain, but when I see him and hear his voice, it brings such sadness, really, at what we have lost. Just tremendous sadness. Bruce and I had the privilege of going to Chicago last week and going to a Turning Point conference. And I'm going to tell you about that today. Bruce is going to join me because we really, really enjoyed it. And there's just a lot of observations and things that we would love a chance to share with you. And we're going to do that on the show. But first, it won't be long. It's happening very quickly here. In fact, Bruce and I are going to go back to D.C. to celebrate. But America celebrates its 250th birthday. I can't wait, really. We're going to take that long trip, jump in our car and drive, and just enjoy the Great American State Fair. All the 50 states will be on the mall in D.C. And we're just really looking forward to that. And, of course, our nation was founded on the belief that every person is endowed by their Creator with unalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Those are God-given. No man can take them away. Not forever. They are just rights that we were given by our Creator. Yet every day, unborn babies are denied the most basic of those rights, and that is the right to life. And that's why the work of Preborn is so important. At Preborn Network clinics, mothers facing unexpected pregnancies are welcomed with compassion, practical support, and a free ultrasound. The ultrasound, you know, it allows the mom to see her baby and hear that tiny heartbeat for the very first time. Her baby, as a matter of fact, is twice as likely to be given the gift of life because the mom is moved by that. The mother is touched by that. That's just God speaking, even if she doesn't know it. Friends, these babies are our future. Future parents, teachers, pastors, entrepreneurs, first responders, and leaders. Every life saved strengthens families, communities, and generations to come. Will you help us make that possible? It's $28 for one ultrasound, for one beautiful picture of one precious life. It always amazes me how unique and precious each baby is. I have a friend, I work with a group of people in D.C., and one of the women works for the Trump administration, just had a baby, and she shared the photo of her baby on Father's Day. And it's just a baby, but it's just moving. It's moving. It's beautiful. And that's the way God created life. We should celebrate it more, and that's why we certainly need to protect it. So if you'd like to help, it's $28 for one ultrasound. That's $28. Just go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy and make your most generous donation. Well, today we're going to be talking about Charlie's life. We're going to give a little update on the trial out there in Utah, but also the work of TPUSA and some of the important, profound things we learned at this conference, and maybe some insights to some things you might not know on this edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness, that we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice, not social justice, but God's justice, what's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association,
a pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
As a father yourself, how would you guide and advise somebody to, you know, not just guide his own children, but also the future generations into not falling into this insane ideology that the woke mind virus has given?
As a father, lead your home. Do your best to be able to earn enough money that your wife does not have to go into the workforce so that she can raise the kids. If she wants to, if she wants to go in the workforce, that's fine. But be the man and try to work the extra shift, work through the night, deliver the income so that your wife can be a mother to the kids. And finally, you are the one that must be the hawk and say no. Dads are there to say no. And as you know, when kids start to become 3, 4, 5 years old, you have to say no a lot. Not that moms can't say no, but they have a different gifting from the Lord. They are more tender, they're more compassionate, they're more long-suffering. Young men need a masculine figure around so that they can teach them how to use their violent impulses. A single mom, God bless her, does not understand what a man is going through. Similarly, a young woman needs a father around so she could see, hopefully, the type of man one day that she will want to marry. And so you as a father must embody both those things at all times.
All right, the voice of the wisdom and voice of Charlie Kirk. All right, so here's the thing. You know, I knew Charlie when he was really young. I am from Chicago. He was, you know, when he was a teenager and making his voice heard. I actually knew the people that backed him and ran in the same circles. But truthfully, I didn't ever reach out to Charlie because he never took a stand on biblical issues. And I just wasn't sure. And he supported a candidate that was gay, and that really upset me. And so I never really invited Charlie into my own world or to be my guest. He was very talented, and on the economic issues and all of that, he was great. But these were parts that I just could not embrace him because of that. So here's the interesting thing. Fast forward many, many years, and my good friend Hutz Hertzberg, who is the head of their education division, just told us this recently. that when Charlie invited him to come and interview for the job heading the whole TPUSA education division, which is vast now, Hutz sort of, you know, is not a kid, you know, so he's kind of turning the tables on Charlie and asking him some questions. So he says, Charlie, my understanding is that, you know, in the past, you have not embraced issues like abortion, or you've not defended marriage, or you've not taken a biblical stand on homosexuality. I want to know about that. And the words out of Charlie's mouth were, Hutz, I have repented for that. And certainly he did. What a lion he became. In fact, Bruce and I was hosting a preborn banquet a year or so ago with Glenn Beck was speaking and Charlie was speaking, and Charlie just blew us out of the water. He was so godly, so filled with the Holy Spirit, and it was just a wonderful thing to see. But I am not one of those people that can boast that I was Charlie's friend. I wish I had been. But I'm coming from that perspective. I watched him grow up, and I watched God just really, like, suddenly the constraints came off of him, and he became a lion for the faith and for the country and for moral principles. So we're going to talk about that a little bit. And I've asked Bruce to join me because, you know, he's my sweetheart, and we had this adventure together. Thank you, honey, for joining me.
Good morning.
Yeah. I want to talk first about, we got a phone call, or email, I guess, from Hutz Hertzberg a couple of weeks ago, or 3 weeks, and asking us if we would come to this conference in Lincolnshire, Illinois. Now, that's north of Chicago. It's what? How many hours from us, Bruce?
Just 18 by driving.
Just 18, give or take a few minutes. Yeah, so because we love Hutz and we've been wanting to do these things, they invited us last year at the America Fest, too, and we just couldn't go. Because you guys keep me busy. Do you know that? I'm a slave to the microphone. No, I'm kidding. But there are reasons. So we decided we were going to drive to Chicago. And let's talk about that for a second, Bruce, because Bruce did all the driving. And Bruce, tell them about how long we were gone and how much we drove. I think that's kind of pathetic, but tell me.
I think we calculated it as 144 hours from leaving home to arriving back home. And within that time, I think we spent 36 hours in commuting time, 18 each way. And I mixed in a four-hour ride down to my high school reunion and back. So it was, we were in the car a lot.
Yeah, we were in the car a lot. But here's the thing. You know, we live in Florida now. You guys know that. So we drove up through, interestingly enough, my home turf, Southern Illinois. We were 7 miles from my hometown. We drove through Kentucky and parts of Tennessee. We took the western route instead of going up through Indiana and then up to Chicago. But the thing I want to mention is Bruce and I just could not believe how beautiful things looked. It was so verdant and green, and the corn was as high as an elephant's eye.
Right.
For those of you who know,
yeah, we've been very concerned about our home state of Illinois, given the governance, especially Governor Pritzker, who really is at war with everything that Christians stand for, and we know that Chicago, Illinois is like many states where a large urban area basically runs the politics of the state. And you look at the map of the state, it's entirely red except for one or two urban areas which go blue, but unfortunately they usually have the majority of votes, or somehow they get the majority of votes once they're counted.
Yeah, exactly.
In order to set the politics of the state.
But the point is, Bruce, when we have we've shared at the mic a long time ago, this is when I was doing the morning show, we used to drive from Washington, D.C. through Ohio, western Pennsylvania, back home to Chicago. And what we noticed was the decay, the sadness, businesses closing. This is during the Obama years. Car dealerships, you know, shrunk and closed. And it was very depressing. But this time, I just felt there's an energy in the country.
in spite of what you just, there's an energy in Illinois. And when we go into restaurants, we encounter like these young people who are working like with enthusiasm, waiting on you, not lethargic. There was a girl in a restaurant we stopped at. She's in nursing school and she has a second job besides that. And she was so cheerful and happy. And I sensed that everywhere. I really did.
You know, I think you can see that the media's view of America is not in alignment with what real Americans, and that's what I would call, especially people from the, as the elites call us, the flyover country. There is a spirit, and I think you've really seen it in this World Cup where people are coming from all over the world and seeing America and posting video after video, just extolling the greatness of America, the beauty of America. Yeah. And you'll never see that on our mainstream media.
No. Anyway, so that was fun. That was fun. And in the corn, you know, I grew up in cornfields. In fact, behind my house, I mean, like immediately off the property line was giant corn, you know, when it was growing during the summer and into the fall, and a huge oak tree that was about 100 years old. And so where some people love the ocean, I love the farm, the corn, the high, the verdant greenness. And so anyway, that's what we enjoyed. So we didn't really mind the drive too much, even though we had a lot of detours. I think it took us a lot longer to get up there than we anticipated.
I was fine till we had about 4 hours to go coming home, and I thought, I am never going to make it. It was about 11 o'clock at night, and I was never so happy to see our driveway at 3:08 a.m. on Sunday morning.
Yeah. So anyway, that's just the fun part of it, but it was a real joy, and it really was. So Hutz had called us, and one of the things about Hutz is in his interview with Charlie, the other thing that he shared with us, and he's told me this before, but he told it at the conference, is in his interviewing of Charlie, he said, well, Charlie, what is it you're trying to do? What is your goal with Turning Point USA? And Charlie leaned into him and said, we're going to save Western civilization. And Hutz said, at first I was started to laugh. And then I looked at him and I realized he's serious. He's serious. And now Turning Point has grown into this huge, huge influential, and it still is. I think it has 1,000 chapters on college campuses. Now it's in high schools all over the country. And it's grown into just an incredible enterprise that I don't think is going to go anywhere anytime soon. So because I mentioned Charlie's, the year of the anniversary of Charlie's assassination, I thought it would be interesting, Bruce, for us to kind of visit what's happening right now in that trial. We won't spend a lot of time on this, but here's a report from CBS News that will help kind of set the stage for that.
Happening today, a Utah judge rules whether prosecutors could be punished for comments made to media about evidence recovered from the assassination case of Charlie Kirk. Let's go live to our CBS newsroom in New York and correspondent Chanel Paul show. Chanel, what comments are we talking about here?
Right. So lawyers for Tyler Robinson, who, as you know, Reed, is the man who police believe shot and killed Charlie Kirk last year, are here in court today. They're asking the judge in this case to essentially take the death penalty off the table, to request to block that from happening. Why? Well, they're claiming here that prosecutors in this case, they say, went on a media tour. And they've talked about ballistic evidence, evidence that the defense team is now arguing was inconclusive, and they say could sway potential jurors. So they're asking the judge today to take the death penalty off the table in this case. And remember, this is an extremely high-profile story that we've been following for several months now. This trial is going to be highly watched as well. And so prosecutors from the Utah County Attorney's Office said, look, there were a lot of false narratives out there. They said that there were conspiracy theories, and there was so much speculation about what may or may not have happened that they felt felt compelled to come forward and share some pieces of the story. Prosecutors have also said, Reed, that if Robinson is convicted in this case, they will be seeking the death penalty. So we'll have to see how the judge today rules on this request to block that potentially from happening. Again, this has not come down just yet. We're keeping a close eye on this. As for Tyler Robinson, he has not entered a plea so far.
You know, they just keep going on and the trial hasn't even started. And yet we see him sitting, you know, the judge opining. As she said a little bit about it, but from your perspective, what's happening?
Well, just to recap, Tyler Robinson is the person who was arrested for shooting Charlie Kirk back last September. And ever since he was arrested, the defense has been trying what I think they have a two-part strategy. They're trying to taint the jury pool. In other words, they're trying to put their defense out in front before the trial even starts. And they're also trying to set up issues so that they can appeal, because odds are Tyler Robinson is going to be convicted of this assassination of Charlie Kirk. And he's facing the death penalty if he's convicted of this in Utah. So they're trying to set up a way to get him either a reversal of conviction or ineligible for the death penalty. And what's gone on is the defense has been out there. There was a ballistics report of a fragment of a bullet that was recovered out of the body of Charlie Kirk. And when the ballistics match was tried against the rifle that shot that was recovered that shot that bullet, you have to understand this fragment has been damaged, and it was inconclusive as to whether or not that bullet fragment could have come from that gun. And that's very common, because you know when a ballistic when a shell hits a body, I mean it fragments into different pieces, and sometimes they bear identifying marks and sometimes they don't. So what the defense was saying is that this fragment could not have come from the rifle that was recovered by the police that was used as the assassination weapon. So they were tainting the jury pool. They were trying to bias people already that the state doesn't even have a case here. They shouldn't have brought this case. And what the prosecution did is they rebutted the defense notion. And what they said is, look, exactly what I told you. This fragment is inconclusive. Does not mean it could have or could not have come from the rifle that was used to assassinate Charlie. So what the defense had asked for is that, all because of this terrible thing that the prosecution had done by defending their case, that the death penalty should have been pulled off the table in response to that. And the judge ruled against that. And again, what the defense is doing is they probably knew that's how it was going to come out, but they're trying to set up an issue for the appellate court.
First, you know, it's so hard for people to understand all of that. And I think it sounds to me like, would you say that they are not, it's like for us, it's like, come on, we've pretty much seen it. Most of us are probably convinced that he is the killer, and because we also know he confessed. And it's like, well, this is such silliness. But these are the games that are played in court. Like,
right. And, you know, Lance Twiggs, who was the, I would call it, trans girlfriend. He's a boy, but they call him a girlfriend of Tyler Robinson, has brought forth evidence, email and conversations between him and Robinson, in which Robinson admitted that he was going to kill Charlie Kirk. And the defense has been trying to eliminate those statements, saying they were improper, or that there's some kind of, believe it or not, like marital privilege between Twiggs.
Are you kidding me?
And Robinson. Oh. So that's the point where this thing has gotten.
You know, it just shows you how broken down our justice system is in other ways. So anyway, so this is going to go on. We don't know when the trial's actually going to start, but it's just lawyers playing their games, and they're trying, of course, to save his life. And, you know, it's very discouraging, Bruce. I remember watching a movie about Abraham Lincoln and reading about him when he was a young man practicing law. And it was always so cut and dried. I remember one story where the jury could not reach an agreement, and the judge just locked them in a room until they couldn't have food or anything until they made a decision. It was a much simpler time, and it was much more common sense. But anyway, so that's the state of Charlie's trial, or the Charlie's assassins, alleged assassins, a trial. It's kind of sad. It should be over. You know, it should have been over. Tyler Robinson. All right, so we did drive then to Lincolnshire to this conference, and we just, I'll just give you an idea, and then we'll talk a little bit about the people. George Barna had all of these stats, incredible stats on the church, the biblical worldview, and how many of us in America actually do have that view. We'll get into that a little bit more in just a second. John Stone Street, who is the part of Breakpoint Ministries on the radio that you hear him all the time. John's just terrific. And I can't mention all of them right now, but Dr. Lutzer spoke. He did a great job. Riley Gaines, Al Mohler. Interesting. I won't say too much about what he said, but Dr. Al Mohler is the president of Southern Seminary. He also does a daily commentary that many, you know, thousands, if not millions of people listen to every day. And he's kind of been a bold leader from the Southern Baptist Convention on the moral issues of the day. I remember way back 20-plus years ago, I invited him to come to Chicago and speak on the genders, way back before that was like central to talk about it, and he was all over it. But during his speech, he just froze and started leaning forward, and the audience was just, we just didn't have any idea what to think. I thought somebody would run up there on the stage. He was just about to pass out, and he just kept leaning, and he would say just enough to, he was like staring, no, it's okay. It's okay. And then we find out after that he's having seizures, these seizures when he's talking. He's been having that a lot. It just seizes him, and then he recovers. So that was an interesting moment in the conference, and we need to pray for Dr. Mohler because he has a tremendous impact on this culture, and especially among Southern Baptists who need to be, they need some real muscle in their understanding of moral issues and regain the passion they had in the 80s to really stand up against the immorality of our nation. So Ryan Walters, who was the former education secretary in Oklahoma, Megan Basham, you know, Shepherds for Sale. She's been at this mic talking about the apostasy. Multi-million-dollar leftists who are buying church leaders. I recommend that book if you haven't read it, Shepherds for Sale. Erica Kirk, and more. So, Bruce, let's go back. I mean, let me you choose. What speaker impacted you that you'd like to kind of talk about?
Well, there are two that really impacted me. One was George Barna, and one was a pastor out of Texas, who talked about Islam. But in regards to George Barna, obviously he is a statistician, he is a researcher, he does deep dives into various issues, and he has done an incredible deep dive into classical Christian education and biblical worldview. And he, you know, what he talks about is that in schools, what we're really supposed to do is we are supposed to educate children, and we're supposed to educate them in regards to the basics, not all this DEI and all this stuff, but reading, writing, arithmetic, geography, Western civilization, things like that. But what he also emphasized is that schools are there to make disciples. We're not just there to learn, be educated, but we're also there to become disciples. And that is the job also of teachers, is to make disciples of their students.
Well, just to be clear, Bruce, I think he's talking, isn't he talking about, in that regard, not public education, but, I mean, there's a correlation, but he's talking about Christian education, pastors, teachers, parents. I mean, it would be a wonderful world in which public school would do that, but I think that's really what he's talking, addressing the Christian community. Yeah.
Well, what this education summit was about was they brought various kinds of teachers. They had public school teachers, they had private school teachers, they had teachers from Christian schools.
About 30% of each.
Right. And as you say, while he was really emphasizing making disciples to the ones from the Christian schools, he also was encouraging even people that are in public schools. You know, we sat at lunch with people that are teaching in the Chicago public schools. Now, you talk about a tough place to teach. You know, as it's basically if you go the day without somebody being stabbed, that's considered a good day, and I'm not kidding. But even them, Mr. Barna was encouraging them that as much as you can and as often as you can, bring Christian values into your teaching with the thought that we are going to make disciples of kids, not just teach them that 2 and 2 is 4.
Yeah. Well, let's share some of the stats that George shared, because I think that there's so many. I mean, there's no way we could share everything he said, but he brought some really interesting stats. Do you want to give me some of the sheets if you don't have
them? Well, what I thought was the most disturbing stat that he brought was talking about pastors and the Christian view, biblical worldview that pastors have. And the breakdown that he had out of the pastors that he surveyed is that of executive pastors, only 4% have a biblical worldview. For youth pastors, which, let me back up, one of the main points that Mr. Barna was making is in regards to how you form your worldview. Most worldviews are formed by the age of 13. And though you may vary somewhat throughout the rest of your life, many people die with the same worldview that they've gotten by the age of 13. And in talking about youth pastors, Barna's research showed that only 12% of youth pastors have a biblical worldview. In regards to senior pastors, it was 41%. And in regards to pastors overall, it's only 33%.
Yeah. And what he means by that, of course, is people whose worldview is faithful to the scriptural text and not tainted by the view that comes from the world, whether it be on marriage or he broke out some of those things, but the laxness, the liberalness with which people, they've lost that righteous sense of what's right and wrong. And even sometimes, you know, embracing gay marriage, if you want to talk about churches, big church, you know, the broad definition of the word church, not just evangelical churches, but.
Well, and what I thought was amazing is how he talked about the goal of public education in many reasons, many ways when it was first started, was to eliminate Christianity from the schools and from their students. And he gave us a quote going all the way back to 1893. And I think one of the most interesting, almost terrifying to me, though, statements that Mr. Barna made was that one of the reasons that public education was founded was to eliminate Christianity from schools and eliminate Christianity from students. And he had a quote going back to 1829 by a person named Orestes Brownson. And the quote is, "Our great objective was to get rid of Christianity. The plan was not to make open attacks on religion, but to establish a system of state, we said, national schools, from which all religion was to be excluded, in which nothing was to be taught but such knowledge as is verifiable by the senses, and to which all parents were to be compelled by law to send their children. Our complete plan was to take the children from their parents at the age of 12 or 18 months and to have them nursed, fed, clothed, and trained in these schools at public expense. But at any rate, we were to have godless schools for all the children in the country. And the first thing to be done was to get this system of school established." And that school was started in 1829 in the city of New York.
You know, Bruce, that sounds like right out of Marx. That sounds like Marx is, you know, Marx was writing a manifesto in the 1800s I can't recall the date, but that just sounds like Mark's. But, you know, that kind of goes along with me. I went to a breakout session with Dr. John Woodbridge, and he is a church historian, like the leading church historian in the country. I think he was a professor at the Evangelical, the one in Deerfield, TEDS, they call it, yeah, Divinity. School. And he's an older man. He had to, like, we went into this breakout room, and he's, like, sitting, it's hard to explain. He's on a stage, but not just a stage. He's higher than that, sitting at a round table because he couldn't walk. And he had a big hat on, but he was quite the character. And when he got into the information, he just lit up like a Christmas tree, Bruce, that professor came out of him. The thing I want to actually interview him, but the thing I want to center on, Yale was, as were all of our universities, founded by Christians. Yale and Harvard and Princeton and all of those. I mean, that was the big part of it. It was central, like, you know, to be theologians, but then to study other things. But that was the central part of your understanding of the world, Christian, biblical worldview. So there was a fight to eradicate that. And in Yale, during the Second Great Awakening, we all watched that movie, The Great Awakening. There was a Second Great Awakening in the early 1800s, I want to save that for a discussion with him. But it was the grandson of the famous preacher, Jonathan Edwards, who was one of the preachers of the early, I don't know, I want to say church, but I guess the early churches in New England in the United States, who was just a firebrand, and his sermons are still available. It was his grandson who led the charge to take back Yale. And it is the most fascinating story, and so that kind of goes with what you're talking about. They were trying to eradicate the gospel and any God-centeredness in these great universities, and they were having the fight way back then. And Yale went through it like three different times in the period of time he's talking about. And Jonathan Edwards' son actually prevailed. At great expense to himself personally, he prevailed, at least for that period of time, to restore Yale to its once strong spiritual roots. Yeah, isn't that interesting?
Yes, it is. And one of the overarching themes of the conference was the way education has changed. They went back to our founding fathers, that nearly every one of them had a classically Christian educated background. And shortly after that, education began to change. As we got into the 1800s, it started to adapt, and humanism started coming into the worldview. And he talked about what we have now is syncretism. And what syncretism is it's like a customized worldview. You blend different thoughts, different beliefs in. And what it does is it starts to remove God as the person who is leading you. And it's about, how do you feel? What are your instincts? What are your values? In other words, you become the standard, not God.
Yeah. Humanism is a God, man-centered. It's like a worship of man. I remember when I was in Moscow in 1990, I think. I remember going outside of our hotel was a park across the street, and inside, you could just walk around. It used to be, I guess, flowers and stuff. This was not so lovely. But they were playing marching music, whatever they were playing. And at the end of the park was this big, like if you think of the Oscars, the man with his arms folded who doesn't wear clothes and has no hair, you know, huge with his legs together. There was they called that the Monument to Human Achievement. And that's one of the symbols of the Soviet Union, a godless society where man is going to achieve everything. But the irony was in that park on that day, the statue was leaning over, almost falling over, and cobwebs and vines were all over that statue. A monument to human achievement. So good luck with that.
I guess it didn't last so well.
Didn't go so well for the Soviets, and it won't go so well for us either. But Dr. Lutzer spoke, and he did a great job talking about the comparison between communism and socialism. And he did a beautiful job teaching the teachers, And there were also kids there, too, who are part of the academies and curriculum of Turning Point, because they have a whole curriculum for kids on classical education, which is available. You know, just go to Turning Point USA and you'll find, you'll just have to search a little bit and you'll find that stuff. And anybody else, you love Daniel Hayworth, and he was that, I didn't see this, he was that young pastor from Texas. And tell us about why he impacted you so much, Bruce.
Okay, Daniel Hayworth has a church down in Central Texas. He was in the Army, and he was deployed overseas into the Middle East, and he saw the effects of Islam. He saw what Muslims were being taught and how dangerous it was. And he gave a little history of the Islam, and it's really, it amazed me that 1,400 years ago, there was no Islam. But within 100 years of it being founded, 50% of the world was taken over by the Islamists. There are 57 Muslim nations today, and none of them started out as Muslim nations. And he warned that this is the same strategy that they're going to use to overtake the Christian church, the modus operandi which they use to take over areas. First they move there, they immigrate. And usually the immigrants maintain a very friendly type of demeanor with you. They get to know you. Then they start to make their way into government. They get on the school boards. They run for, you know, we're seeing it now where total Islamists are running for public office as state representatives, mayors, things like that. Then after they gain a little bit of power, then they start to complain, and they basically beat down. They make people feel badly, like they've been bad to, like, they victimize
their rights
them.
Have been abused. Yeah.
And then once they get you into that part, then they try to take over, because it was explained to us how the voting goes when these people go to a mosque. And one of his points was, you know, we want to think the best of our neighbors who are Muslim, but if they are going to a mosque and it's a radicalized mosque, they are not on the same page with you. They are being taught that you are the enemy. And what happens in these mosques is when people leave there, it's not like a Christian church where you can put in the offering plate or not. It is required that you donate to the church. And also,
to the mosque.
to the mosque. And when elections come, the imams of these mosques require their members to vote. And if you don't vote, you are no longer welcome at the mosque. And he explained the percentages that with Muslims, 90%+ of them are registered to vote, and they go vote. But with Christians, only 40% of Christians are registered to vote. And of that 40%, only 40% actually do vote.
Yeah.
And so the point was that if the Muslims can get 7% of the population of an area, they can take it over politically.
Yeah. One other thing, it's the reason Islam is so successful in conquering. Yes, they do have a plan. It was laid out by Muhammad. You know, he had this vision. But did you know one of his visions was from Satan? It was called the Satanic Visions. And he actually was scared to death because he knew it was Satan. But his wife talked him out of it and said, oh, no, that's why you're so special, because you're a prophet. So, but the reason Islam is different, it's not that their ideas or their knowledge, their explanation of Allah, and Allah is not Jehovah, trust me, they're not the same gods. It's not that they have a superior theology, if you want to call it that. It's that they threaten and they kill. You know, because people who believe in God, some God, most like Buddhists, or they're not violent people, but Islam is violent. And so if they can't persuade you, they conquer, make you pay, and then eventually, if you won't bend the knee, they will kill you. And this is what their history is. So it's happening in Texas. It's happening all over. And we will do a whole show on that, but not today. So that's Daniel Hayworth?
Daniel Hayworth, yes.
And doesn't he have a video series, honey?
He does, and it's available online.
Yeah.
All his teachings are available online for free. And his teachings are dynamite. And it's, again, it's Daniel Hayworth, H-A-Y-W-O-R-T-H.
Okay, so other people, and we're talking about the Turning Point ED education conference that we went to in Chicago. And it's not that you need to know about that conference, but geez, these are concepts just to give you an idea of the kinds of things that they are providing. It's certainly helpful. You know, there's always a learning curve, and it helps for you to understand what's going on in the world behind you so that you can stand firm, and it's so that your view of the world truly is a biblical worldview. So Ryan Walters was the Secretary of Education in Oklahoma. He made his bones by, I think he got a law passed that made the Bible, allowed the Bible to be taught in public schools. I don't know if it was a mandate, but that's one way he became very well known. But he really did some great things while he was the Secretary of Education, and he's still in there swinging away. And then Riley Gaines came, and Riley told the whole story of what had happened to her. We heard things we hadn't heard before, didn't we, honey?
I was blown away by Riley Gaines, and if you want to see a representative of Christ and a representative that will tell you what is going on in these schools, it's Riley Gaines. And I totally underestimated what she was going to bring to the table. You know, she talked about when she was a swimmer back at the University of Kentucky, and she had won, I believe, 4 NCAA championships, had won something like 22 types of championships as a swimmer. And when she was a senior in college, and it was her very last race, she was pitted against Leah Thomas. From University of Pennsylvania, who is a trans man. And she said, you know, I'm standing up there on the starting block. Here I am, like 5'6" and, 120 pounds probably. And here he is, 6'4". Size 15 feet. I mean, she said he was just giant. And, to me, it's a God thing that she was able to stay with him. So anyway, they raced for the NCAA championship. And this is a long race that they were in. And they tied.
That's amazing right there. That little girl tied with him.
To the hundredth of a second. That's how accurate the timing is. That they hit the wall exactly at the same time. Now, here's a woman that's won all these titles, has brought all this to their sport, versus this guy who was basically a non-entity as a male swimmer that came over to swim against the women. And the NCAA huddled after the result of the race and told Leah, we're going to give the trophy to Thomas, and you are not going to get anything. If you want to have a picture taken with the trophy, you can, but that's it.
Yeah, but he's going to get the trophy.
So talk about political correctness on steroids, no pun intended.
Well, and the thing, too, that she shared was that the last thing she wanted to do was get involved in a controversy. She was all about swimming, all about her career. She was getting ready to achieve the heights of her swimming career, and she didn't want to make waves. And she said she didn't want to make waves. She was busy swimming. And then this is just like, this happens to us as believers.
Yeah.
God just gets a hold of us and uses these terrible circumstances to wake us up. And now I don't think she'll ever stop fighting.
No,
right now.
She's been awakened. It was a great lesson because she said, you know, I did not want to even go into the pool. I was just going to pass and not do it. And something told me that I should swim. And that's the result of it. And I agree with you, Sandy. She will never be the same. Her life was radically changed. I mean, she was a believer, and she's always been faithful to God in her adult life. But I believe that she was turned into a warrior by what happened in that pool. And if you ever get a chance to go see her, she is amazing.
Yeah, she is. I echo that. I felt the same way, Bruce. And so one last thing then, Erica Kirk was our last speaker, and, Erica she is gorgeous. She's got the most beautiful eyes, and I'm sure you all know the story about how Charlie, she came to interviewed for a job at Turning Point, and he's interviewing her, and then he just puts his pencil down and says, I don't want to hire you. I want to date you. And then she says back to him, don't you think maybe we should just be friends first? And he said, life is too short. No. So I think they got married. Like, it didn't take long. And so Erica herself has a very strong academic and success past. She talked about it a little bit. She said, you know, I never share this, but these are the things in my life prior to meeting Charlie. I think she'd started her own business. She was a remarkable woman, very capable. And so that was interesting to me because I wasn't sure. Here's this mom with two babies. Her husband is assassinated, and suddenly, like overnight, they make her the CEO. And she explained that she and Charlie were absolutely at one. She knew about everything he was doing. She went everywhere with him. She knew all of the staff. She knew every program and everything they were trying to do. So she said it wasn't like I was stepping into just symbolically stepping into leadership. I really was a co-leader with Charlie. Obviously, he was the leader, but I was his partner, and I knew everything. I knew where the bodies were buried. I knew all the good and all the bad. And so that, I thought, was really good for her to share. And, of course, she's had a terrible year because of the horrible things that people have said. You know, even Candace Owens saying that she knew Charlie was going to be assassinated. His own wife was part of the, like, plot, wherever it is that Candace is woven in her dark, wicked mind. And so I can't think of anything that might hurt more if you'd lost your husband in that way and then you'd be blamed in some way that's just horrific. It's really horrific. So under her leadership, they're doing really well. As we said, the stats are incredible. 1,000 chapters in colleges and universities, and it's just growing like wildfire. The last time Hutz was with us, he laid out all the money that was just shortly after Charlie was killed or was assassinated. He laid out all the money that's coming in and all I just throw this out because I can't think of the exact number, but like overnight, 150,000 requests for their curriculum. He says, we don't even have that much in our warehouse, Sandy. We can't keep up. And so that's the kind of thing that's happening. They have this curriculum for schools, homeschool curriculum for your kids. They're developing these academies. And so if you have an interest, it's Turning Point USA, and I think you should go check it out. One last thing I want to say about our friend Hutz Hertzberg. And if you've, again, listened to me for a long time, you will know this, but Hutz has led an incredible life himself. And I always knew that when Charlie hired him, that no matter what else was going on there, Hutz would be speaking a biblical truth into Charlie's ear, steadfastly, without moving and shaking. And what prepared him for this, besides all the things that he's done, and I could go through all of that, but about 5 years ago, maybe 10, I lose track, he dropped dead at Midway Airport. Now, Hutz was the chaplain. He was a chaplain in the military. He was a chaplain for all of the airports in Chicago, or Midway, for O'Hare. That's huge. It was over all the programs there and all that was happening. And he and Lynn, his wife, beautiful wife Lynn, were at the airport, and Hutz just went to the bathroom for a minute, and suddenly he just collapsed, and he died. It's an amazing story. Hailey was with them, their daughter, and he was just lifeless, and they carried him off. And there's a lot to this story, but let me just say, it made Chicago news all over Chicago because they revived him, and it was against all odds that he lived. He was technically dead. And so Hutz came through that, and he had an incredible spirit before that happened, didn't he, Bruce? His humility.
Absolutely. You know, Hutz is one of the most steady, most learned, just rock solid people you'd ever want to know. And if you ever, you know, talk about God things, here's a young man, Charlie Kirk, trying to run this organization, and he's phenomenal. But you know, at 32 years old, you still do not have the breadth and the width of experience that a man like Hutz has. And I can't think of a better hire that they could have made to run this educational arm of TPUSA, because Hutz is the kind of guy who is going to hold you accountable, but in a gentle way. And he's going to teach you. He's not going to He's not going to teach you by offending you. He's going to teach you by leading you. And I just, you know, I think Hutz was saved off the floor at Midway Airport just exactly for this. I mean,
I do too, Bruce.
It's just, it's phenomenal that, yeah, that they intersected together. Yeah.
Yes, and so I just wanted you to know that, because if you ask yourself, well, what's going on with Turning Point under Erica's leadership, will it be as strong? Now, Erica, one thing that impressed me, she continued to quote verses just off the top of her head, and when she was talking, she'd say, she just, her mouth, her mind, and her heart was filled with Scripture, and that was very moving to me. That was very moving to me. Just showed what's really in her heart. And with a guy like Hutz there, and then the other, you know, the other crew, I don't know them as well. I know this part. And so I just wanted you to know what's happening. And I can't say enough about Turning Point USA or Turning Point Ed. I think you can have confidence having your kids be a part of it. They have chapters in high schools. If your kids, you know, want to be part of, start a chapter in their high school, they need, you know, leaders. They're looking for leaders. And heaven knows, you know, there's a lot of opposition. It takes courage for our kids to do this, and a lot of them are doing that. They're stepping up to the plate. Charlie has really laid the foundation for making men, men, and girls, women, to play their role in the kingdom. It's just, it's amazing. And so it was wonderful, wasn't it, honey? Glad we went.
Yeah, you know, I have to say, I really did not follow Charlie Kirk before his assassination, and now I really regret now that I did not, because since his assassination and since our increased awareness of him, I cannot listen to tapes of him enough. He is a powerhouse, and I used to hear people say, well, he might run for president one day, and go, you know, maybe we're jumping the gun a little bit on a kid that was at that time probably 25 years old. You know what? When you listen to those tapes and you tell me whether at some point he might not have been able to run for president and been a great, great president, and the things he would have brought to this country from a spiritual standpoint would have been amazing. But, you know, very few people, I would call them martyrs. I would call him a martyr, because people are just rallying to the teachings and the call of him. And I'll tell you, he's made me a convert.
Yeah. Well, you know, the Bible says that what man meant for evil, God meant for good. Charlie left this earth too soon. It was evil, evil, evil that destroyed him, that killed him in that manner while he was just talking to college students at that campus. It's just so wicked. It's incomprehensible. And many of us saw it on television. We saw it. And we won't forget that. And so God is using this for good, transforming young people's lives and adults that pay attention. And so we're very grateful for Charlie's life and grateful for Turning Point. All right, we'll take a brief break and just a couple of more things, and we'll be done on today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Reborn makes it possible for us to have these conversations. And you all, so many of you have been faithful donors, just amazing. You are amazing to me. I would say that, you know, Preborn advertises on almost all the major talk shows and podcasts. And our show performs as well as, from my understanding, most of those major podcasts. And you know why? It's because of you. It's because of you. There are fewer of you, but you give generously, and you really believe in saving babies. And so thank you for that. I'm deeply grateful. I'm deeply grateful. And so for just $28, which is the cost of a dinner right now, in most places where most normal people eat, you can sponsor an ultrasound or introduce a mom to her baby for the very first time. And 100% of your donation will go towards saving those babies. Just go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's Preborn.com/Sandy.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
You want to know how we save the country? We raise more good people. if we raise more good people than bad people, more righteous people, people that love the Lord and love liberty and love our nation, then we win. It's simple math.
Okay, so that was a little shorty with Charlie, just his wisdom. And there were a couple other things I wanted to play. Charlie Kirk, again, if you just tuned in, which I bet you didn't just tune in. But Charlie talks about, you know, that he's been accused of being a racist, which is so bizarre to me. There were so many young black men, part of the staff and also students there at the conference. And I think, what in the world? And then we actually asked someone about it, and it was because he made some comment about DEI. And how dangerous it was to choose people to do jobs that are really important because of their race or color, because it's dangerous for all of us. And I agree with him. Who does? I mean, when did we ever start thinking of each other in categories of color? I know as long as many of us have been alive in this country, we've thought of that. But that's just not, are you kidding me? That doesn't define a person. Think about it logically. Your color does not define you. Man looks on the outward appearance, but God looks on the heart. So that system is just not of God, and it's just sick, and it causes a lot of grievance, and people have used it for horrible things. But Charlie was not a racist. A racist who is one, to me, who thinks of everything in terms of race. So this is Charlie on fatherlessness in the black community. Let's listen, clip 7.
In the black community, when fathers are no longer around, crime goes up, poverty goes up. You'll understand this less. A man in the audience who grew up without a father will totally get this. If it's just a mom in the house, the dad should come in and discipline the 14-year-old for acting like a brat. The dad comes in and he says, stop doing this. You need to be able to outrank the 14-year-old brat with another masculine figure.
But don't you think that, like, there's a reason that a lot of the black community doesn't have a father, and it's because of systemic racism. It's because, like, black men are more likely to be in prison.
Oh, yeah, so why do people go to prison?
A lot of the time, it's because they're in poverty and they have no other way to get...
Okay, so they commit crimes.
If someone is stealing something because they have no money and there's no jobs...
That's so interesting. So you think most crimes are crimes of necessity in the black community? I'm not sympathetic to people that steal, that loot, because that's a values problem. And I don't like making excuses for people that do things that are obviously destructive. Secondly, we have a problem in black America. The biggest problem is not racism. It's the lack of dads. If dads are around, kids flourish.
Okay, isn't that great? I mean, his wisdom was amazing. And he had so much effect on people. This is one last testimony I want to play. This is a girl who had interacted with Charlie at one point, and this is a follow-up, clip 5.
My name's Ariel. You might have seen a video of me on Charlie Kirk's Instagram. I talked to him last year when he was on this campus. I was born to a mother who had severe mental illness. It led her to abuse me physically. I was then adopted by my grandparents when I was about 8. I went through all this abuse in my life, all these hardships. I'm now 19. I found a wonderful church back at home and here. But pretty much my whole message to anyone who might see this is the potential for suffering is not worth the ending of a life prematurely. If the world weren't so evil, I'd be talking to Charlie Kirk again. But I can't do that. And so when I heard that you were coming on campus and that you were part of the same company, I knew I just had to talk to you again.
It takes a great deal of courage to be able to talk about it and acknowledge it in the first place, and then to go out into the world and to reuse that testimony, to reuse those hardships to make the world a better place for other people. And I seriously commend you for that. It's not the easiest thing in the world, but easy isn't why we do it. We do it because we want to help the next generation, because we want to create a better world, a better culture for them than the one that we were raised up in. And I love how you're using your story to do that.
I don't know who that surrogate of Charlie's was, a female, and she was just doing a great job. So he's trained some people to carry on with his, you know, Socratic method of talking to kids on college campuses, and it's a beautiful thing. You know, one thing I picked up from the conference was just this phrase, God calls us to sacrifice, not to compromise. God calls us to sacrifice, not to compromise. And, of course, that's certainly what Charlie did. Well, before we say goodbye, I want to just one last word about Preborn, our sponsor. If you're a business owner, you might want to consider a larger donation, and it will help you to claim a write-off. That will be helpful to you with your taxes. But, of course, the most important thing is, and I'm sure it is to you, is that you would save the lives of babies. A donation of $1,000, $2,000, $10,000, $15,000 will sponsor an ultrasound machine for a needy clinic, helping to save countless babies' lives for years to come. All gifts are tax-deductible and will reach eternity. Well, get involved today. Just go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. Honey, any last words from you before we say goodbye?
Well, I think Charlie's admonition that we have to save Western civilization is really a phrase to live by. I know it sounds maybe a little pie in the sky, but we all need to do our little part.
Only he's doing a great big part.
Yes, he is.
If anybody could accomplish it, it would be Charlie. So, all right. Well, listen, thank you so much. Honey, thanks for joining me.
It was my pleasure. This conference was incredible. Charlie Kirk was an incredible person.
All right. Well, for all of you listening, thank you. Thank you for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.